Hi, this is Paul Douglas Boyer for the Mad Money Machine, early March 2007, show 53. So, now, you know country singer Glenn Campbell? I think if he would have gone into the investment advisory business way back when, he might have started out picking stocks, but then come to realize that he'd rather be where there's light expenses and fees. He'd tell you to buy and hold now, boy. And here's how I think he would have sung about that fact.
I've been picking these stocks so long, investing it all so wrong. I know every crook on these dirty sidewalks of Wall Street, where hustling's the name of the game, and traders get washed away like the snow in the rain. There's been a load of compromising on the road to my retiring, but I'm gonna be where there's light expenses and fees. I like buy and hold now, boy, setting out on a course with an index portfolio. I like buy and hold now, boy, owning all of the stocks in the companies I don't even know, and the turnover ratio so low. Well, I really don't have to explain, picking stocks is a really big pain. And you're down if you're riding with Cramer, that's taking the wrong way. And I dream of the things I'll do when I go and retire with a lot more money than you. There's been a load of compromising on the road to my retirement, but I'm gonna be where there's light expenses and fees. I like buy and hold now, boy, setting out on a course with an index portfolio. I like buy and hold now, boy, owning all of the stocks in the companies I don't even know, and the turnover ratio so low. I like buy and hold now, boy.
Oh my goodness, yes, cut me a little break, please. Fair Use Act with parody privileges, Weird Al Yankovic style. Don't forget Adam Curry playing the Beatles on his podcast. I thank you, Glenn Campbell. You can come on this show anytime, Glenn. I'll promote your music. Go buy his songs on iTunes. Go buy Rhinestone Cowboy. And maybe he'll make a new version. Buy and hold now, boy. You have tuned your computer or iPod to the Mad Money Machine. I'm Paul Douglas Boyer, show 53. It's not about getting rich. It's about getting free, financial freedom. Why spend any effort trying to beat the market when with no effort you can be the market? The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Go read everything you can read at IFA.com. Yes, it's a subject I'm becoming more and more passionate about, helping thousands of investors 2 years at a time learn to save and invest, reach your financial freedom a lot sooner. Coming up on this show, the dirty dark secrets from the book Trading with the Enemy. We'll have a spin at Guru Roulette. I've got a cool tool for you. And if I can fit it all in, we might even have an answer for you. every once in a while, I will go out and read the Kirk Report, one of my brothers in being named must-read blogger by Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine last October. The Kirk Report, he is a guy that really advocates and talks about trading in the market, trading stocks. And but he had a fantastic series of articles a couple weeks ago called Lazy Portfolios. And he had this on his blog. He says, "While I spend a great deal of time talking about the market and trading stocks, especially since that is how I earn my living, you should also understand that I think the lazy portfolio approach is the very best way to go for the vast majority of investors. In fact, when friends, family, and even casual acquaintances ask me how they should invest in the market, my first and best answer is for them to develop a simple portfolio of index funds and exchange-traded funds. Unfortunately, their response is always one of either utter disbelief, confusion, suspicion, and/or frustration. After all, how can someone who successfully trades for a living say something so lame and simple? I think most think I'm just trying to dodge their question and/or not reveal my holy grail secrets, but nothing could be further from the truth." He says, "While trading for a living presents a number of challenges and requires specialized skill sets, experience, tools, and knowledge, successful long-term investing does not. Strategies that keep it simple, have low overhead costs, which are tax efficient and diversified, will provide you with everything you need to hit your objectives." And he goes on to say, "I really enjoy making good and aggressive trades, but I'm also smart enough to know that in the long run, the market always wins. And for that reason, the majority of my financial assets sit in a lazy portfolio strategy." Well, thank you, Charles Kirk, for sharing that. It no longer has to be a guilty pleasure of mine to read your website now that I know that you're a lazy investor, too. Let's pull a tool of the tool crib. Will you be ready for retirement when the time comes? Many of us don't know if we're on track financially. You can find out where you stand in less than 8 minutes. Just answer a few quick questions and get your R score, service mark nationwide, and ideas to help you prepare for retirement at nationwide.com's Retirability Check, retirement tool for retirement planning. Basically, go out to nationwide.com. You can click Are You Ready for Retirement? And you click the button that says Start Now. So up pops a flash video, interactive flash video presentation. They talk to you and ask you questions, and based on your questions, they may have somebody else come out. So out on the screen comes a lady right now.
Are you financially prepared for retirement? Hey, if you're like a lot of people, you might not even know, and that could be a problem. That's why Nationwide developed this reality check based on work by the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. You'll find out if your retirement is on track to be sunny, scary, or somewhere in between. Just answer a few questions and we'll crunch the numbers. You know, you'll end up with a score that shows where you stand. You don't need a bunch of financial documents either to answer the questions. Probably know most of the answers right off the top of your head. Oh, and just so you know, your answers will stay just between us. And one more thing. Based on your answers to the first few questions, you're one of my buddies in the back here. We'll walk through the rest of the questions with you. All right, you ready to jump in? Let's go.
So it asks you what year you were born, and I type that in. What is your gender? Are you married? And how much do you earn per year? And how much does your spouse earn per year? Then click continue at the bottom. And she walks away. And up comes somebody else.
You know, we may be a lot alike. I've got a great job, kids, and a couple of big things planned on the horizon. You know what scared me more than hitting my 40s? Preparing for retirement. But this reality check helped me move past the uncertainty to get a grip on where I stand. Okay, all right, let's get started on your score. Just start by answering these questions about 401ks and similar plans.
All right, so it has categories of questions like, do you have 401ks, do you have assets or debt, What do you think about Social Security? Do you have housing? Do you have a pension?
Congrats! We've reached the end. You've answered all the questions. Now click below and get your score. You're probably wondering what it means. This number represents how prepared you are to meet your retirement needs. Keep in mind that 100 and up is what you're shooting for, no matter what your age. People who hit that and stick to the path they're on should be well prepared to maintain their current standard of living when they retire. If they score lower, they'll probably have to make some tough choices about where to cut expenses in retirement or continue working. Wow, it looks like you've made some wise financial decisions. In fact, you're on track to have more than you need. Good job. Pat yourself on the back. Go ahead.
Well, that's the tool for this time, Nationwide's Retirability Check, and it's all free. On the December 25th edition, the Christmas show for Kramer's Mad Money last year, the show was repeated recently, Jim talked about what he called less sophisticated strategies than picking stocks, namely index funds, mutual funds, and ETFs. He said some things that in the context of investing, I think need to be clarified. Now we know that Jim Cramer's show is called Mad Money for a reason. He specifically states that he's not talking about retirement money or money you need. By the way, what money do you have that you don't need? Anyway, I thought it might be interesting to bring in Mark Hebner, the president of Index Funds Advisors, to talk about some of these ideas, not in the context of mad money, but in the context of your money machine. That is, money you do need, your retirement money, what I like to call your financial freedom money. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I want to play some snippets from this show that Cramer had where he talked about index funds and see what you think about it. Even though Jim many times talks about the difference between mad money and your retirement money, I still feel that people watching the show, when they watch a show like this, can get confused about what he's talking about when he downplays index funds and mutual funds and ETFs. And so I'd like to talk about these in the context of actual investing. So let me play first clip for you. The first clip, he talks about index funds, and let's hear that.
But there's something inherently wrong, commonsensically wrong, with any index or index fund. At any given time, it's weighted down with a huge load of bad stocks.
Mark, what do you think?
Fact of the matter is, a portfolio of index funds, like this Portfolio 100, was up 22% with all those so-called bad stocks in there. The fact of the matter is that 97% of money managers underperform a simple index fund over 10 years, which says managers cannot identify good or bad investments in advance. The other interesting thing about that point is it turns out that stocks that are small in value, which are often characterized as quote-unquote bad stocks, have higher returns for investors than the so-called good stocks. Good stocks are often thought of as large growth stocks, have returns of about 9.5% a year, and when you look at small value, they're more like 14% a year, or 15% of the year per year over 50-year periods. So, I'm sorry, Jim, but you got that all backwards.
All right, let's listen to the next clip about mutual funds then.
Second, if you're going to buy a mutual fund, you should only be in one, and it should be a diversified fund. Since most mutual funds are diversified by definition, there's no reason for you to be in two or three funds, which always drives me crazy. Look at this. I'm a supermarket of mutual funds. That's absurd.
Well, if you look on page 122 of my book or step 6 on my website, table 6-4, you'll see how different indexes have performed over the last 78 years. We look at about 15 different indexes, and it should be obvious immediately when you look at this table that there is a shuffling of different asset classes or indexes from year to year, and you never know which one is going to get the higher return. That is, in fact, why you diversify. And diversification is really the investor's only free lunch. What that means is every investment has an expected return and a uncertainty of achieving that return. Turns out the beautiful thing about diversification is it just reduces the uncertainty without altering the expected return. In other words, if you hold one stock, it's got an expected return of about 10% per year with a standard deviation of 50, while the whole market has an expected return of still 10% per year, but a standard deviation of about 15. And so what did you do there? All you did was improve the certainty of achieving that 10% by completely diversifying. Now, the stock picker likes to think he can find the needle in the haystack, but the evidence says that he can't. And all investors would be better served just to pick up that whole haystack and walk away instead of trying to dig through it looking for that one great or couple great stocks, as Cramer would propose that you could do. Facts are, and the evidence shows, that that's not so easy.
Okay. Third and final clip that I want to play from the show for you talks about being in control.
Plus, one of the best reasons to own individual stocks instead of buying into a mutual fund, you control your own tax decisions. You get to take profits and pay taxes when you want to, not when the mutual fund decides for you. If you're an individual investor, you're small, you're limber, your trades don't cause stocks to spike or avalanche, and your portfolio doesn't need to look like an index fund.
Okay, well, the first thing that I like to mention to investors is that the only time you should sell your portfolio is, number one, when you need money, or number two, when you've lost your faith in capitalism. And that's it. So the concept of taxes should not be a concern to most investors, because they should never sell a properly constructed portfolio. Now, that's a mouthful. First of all, you got to understand how to construct your portfolio and what's the optimal way to maximize your returns at each level of risk. But once you've done that, and you buy a portfolio of index funds where your fund manager is not trading anyway, he's passively holding, you know, a basket of stocks, when you've got this all figured out and all laid out, you minimize your taxes down as low as you can do. Step seven in my book and on my website, we call it Silent Partners. It goes into a lengthy discussion as to why this sort of passively managed form of investing is the optimal tax strategy for all investors. By the way, I don't see there's any money that should be mad money. We worked hard to earn this money. After tax and all the labor we put in there, and after we met all our expenses in our life, what we're able to save, every dollar is a precious dollar, and there's no reason to waste it on what Cramer calls, you know, the so-called mad money.
Wow.
I think that's absurd. Every dollar is critical and important to every investor, and should not gamble it away in any respect.
Well, excellent points. Thanks very much, Mark, for clarifying some of those points that Cramer's making about mad money, but could be interpreted by people investing their money.
Thank you, Paul.
I like buy and hold now, boy.
Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Men Machine Show number 53 is Charles Schwab. Talk to Chuck. Born 1937, Charles Schwab is founder and chairman of the Charles Schwab Corporation, which was launched in 1971 as a traditional brokerage company, and in 1974 became a pioneer in the discount brokerage business. Today, the Charles Schwab Corporation is one of the nation's largest financial services firms, engaged through its subsidiaries in providing securities brokerage and related financial services for over 7 million active accounts. On the 2006 Forbes 400 list, Charles Schwab is listed as the 50th richest person in the United States, with a fortune of approximately $4.6 billion. It takes money to make money, and it takes other people's money to make you a whole lot of money, I guess. Well, there was an article in Money Magazine in January, and it asked Charles Schwab some questions, and here's one question they asked him. If you could give one bit of financial advice to someone who's just starting out, what would you say? What do you think Charles Schwab would say about that? Here's his answer. Buy index funds and ETFs. That might not seem like enough action to a 25-year-old, but it's the smartest thing to do. Put most of your energy into your work and learn to communicate. I think the people who become really successful are those who sense what others are feeling and how to make them comfortable. Well, maybe it's easy for Charles Schwab to say that with $4.6 billion in his bank account, but it still seems like good advice to me, too. There's our guru for show 53. Congratulations, Charles Schwab!
Hey, Paul, it's David. Just wanted to give you a call, let you know that I did it and created my first podcast, and it finally got indexed in iTunes. It's a Fast Money Machine, and I would appreciate it if you could give it a plug on your episode. And
Sorry, I can't give out plugs on this show for your podcast, Fast Money Machine, for people that watch the Fast Money Stock Picking Show. Fast Money Machine. Thanks for calling, David.
Hey, Paul, this is Navstar from Down Under. Love your show. Just checking in and leaving me a message to say keep it up. And we're looking for another giveaway. So, and I've got a giveaway of a book. So, you know, if you could give us another book, give us another chance to get a book. And I know you won't send it Down Under, but maybe you can send it to my cousin in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was what we say Down Under. We say bonza. We say bonza, mate. So that's what we do Down Under, and we're, you know, looking at Mad Kramer's Mad Money. He says booyah, but the Aussies, we say bonza. Anyway, keep up the good work. Talk to you later, buddy. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks, Nevstar, for calling that in. I guess that calls for a stuttering bonza. Oh, and the book that everybody's talking about, Mark's talking about his book, and Nevsta's talking about giving away a copy of the book. The book is Index Funds, the 12-Step Program for Active Investors. If you haven't seen this book, you've got to see it. It's the first coffee table book on investing. Why that? Because it's a big, thick, heavy, hardbound book with beautiful custom paintings in it about the 12 steps of investing. And now, I'm not going to give one away right now, but pretty soon, I have a feeling, if you keep listening, there will be some giveaways on the show. So keep listening.
I like buying hold now, boy.
Also, go out to my website, madmoneymachine.com, and at the top right, you'll see a button that says Dig Me. That simply votes for the show and tries to move it up the list in the Dig Business Podcast list, so that other people can help find the Mad Money Machine show. Let's try to get the Mad Money Machine at least higher than Money Girl's quick and dirty tips, okay? And also, you might have noticed out at madmoneymachine.com, I have added a link now that you can sign up for my email list. And so far, I haven't spammed people too badly. I generally email out a little reminder of when the show is posted. And I might at some point email out to you more important, urgent information in newsletter format. So, yeah, go ahead and sign up, put your email address in there, and I'll be in touch.
Setting out on a course with an index portfolio.
And I'd like to give a big special shout-out, booyah, to Todd Good. Remember Todd Good from Waterfront Roasters? Well, he sent me a I don't know if he sent me a Valentine's Day present or a birthday present a couple weeks ago. 4 cases of coffee, individual packs that you put in your coffee maker. And these are personalized coffees. One of them is Mad Money Machine Roast. One of them was Booyah Blend. And he also made one. I'm a decaf drinker, so he has the Mad Money Machine Decaf Premier Roast, which I just love and enjoy. I've actually got a link to Waterfront Roasters out at the homepage of Mad Money Machine. Go give him a visit. Get your own customized coffee blends with that are personalized to you or your organization. Could make a great gift for somebody.
Owning all of the stocks in the companies I don't even know.
Hi, Paul. This is Clinton from New Hampshire. Just a feedback on the advice to read. I think it was step four, and because he was concerned about the downturn in the market. And, you know, investing in index funds right now, given his perspective. Well, I think, how about this thought? How about the concept of dollar cost averaging? I mean, if he has a sense that it's going to go down, just rather than throw everything in right now, over the next, I don't know, 6 months, 2 months, whatever he feels the time horizon is for his negative thoughts, just start to move things in an orderly fashion. Move things from one investment to another at some sort of a, you know, regular rate. I mean, not, I don't mean like a look at prices. I mean like every month or every 2 months, throw 10% in, 20% in, or whatever, you know, I mean, something like that. And that way he can feel comfortable that as things go up or down in the long or short term, that it'll be covered by this dollar cost average. I don't know, just a thought. Take care.
Hey, thanks for calling in with your thought. You know, in fact, there is an article that I've got a link to in the show notes for this show that talks about whether it's best to do dollar cost averaging or just to throw it all in at once. And, you know, I can understand if you're doing sort of a direct deposit type investing, then, yeah, averaging into the fund is the way to go. As you get money, save it and invest it. This article seems to say if you've got the money to invest, then investing immediately is the way to go. Let's hear some more calls.
Hey, this is Matthew from Louisiana. Bayou Booyah to Jim Cramer. I was asking if Google would be a good stock.
No, by VTI.
Hi, I'm Christina. I'm 9 years old. I want my one stock in. Do you think Limited would be a good stock? Bye.
No, by VTI. VTI.
My name is Mike. I need to see if you can check one I've been looking at. IBTY. Is the symbol IBTY. Thank you.
No, VTI is the symbol. VTI. Full disclosure, I own some VTI, but that's not going to move the market, is it? Let's take a real quick look at the Portfolio Smackdown. Now, for new listeners, what do we got going on here? We're doing a scientific experiment to see whether people who are influenced by Jim Cramer's stock-picking recommendations can beat the Index Folio 100 Diversified Portfolio Buy-and-Hold Index Funds. We have about 20 people who have signed up to pick and trade stocks according to Jim Cramer's recommendations. And I'm taking the average of all of their recommendations up against the IFA Index Folio 100. And as of the end of Monday, February 26th, here's how we stand. The average of all of the portfolios of people picking stocks according to Cramer's guidelines and recommendations is up for the year 1.28%. The IFA Index Folio 100 is up 5.31%. Now, you know, I had a feeling that Index Folio 100 might beat the averages of all the portfolios. But here's what I didn't realize. That it would beat every single one of them. The highest performer up to this point is Alan Pendleton. And he's up 5.21%. And the Index Folio, like I just said, is up 5.31%. After about 2 months. Well, we'll see what happens later in the year. Now, first of all, you know, one thing I'd like to caution you about is really looking at your own investments like this, if you're properly diversified into buy and hold index funds, you really don't need to look at your money every day, even every week, or maybe look at them once a month. So what we're doing here is a little bit different than what I'd recommend. But it's interesting to note this, that just buying a diversified portfolio of index funds not only beats the average of everybody, but beats everybody. It's crazy. You can see all the details and follow along out at madmoneymachine.com/portfolios. I do update that daily. You can see how everybody's doing. Well, see, I told you we might not have time for the answer segment on this show. I promise to put it in on the next show, which will be released March the 13th. Tuesday, the March the 13th, 2 weeks after this show is released. So if you have an investing question that you'd like to get the answer to, call me, 206-734-4763. Here at the Mad Money Machine, I realize that your time is valuable, so the next two segments are optional. The first segment is the review of the book Trading with the Enemy by Nicholas Mayer, Cramer's former employee at his hedge fund. It's the tell-all book that exposes all the secrets about Jim Cramer. And then after that, I have a review of the chapter 3 from Jim Cramer's own book, Mad Money, Watch TV, Get Rich. And then I talk a little bit about my chapter 3 from my book. All those are optional. Thank you so much for downloading this show. This has been Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes buy and hold now, boy, to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next time. Please visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors, at IFA.com. Well, on the last show, I said that on this show, I would reveal the dark secrets that Jim Cramer doesn't want you to know about by reviewing the book Trading with the Enemy by one of his former employees, Nicholas Mayer. Well, Jim Cramer ran his hedge fund for 14 years, from 1987 through 2000, and Nicholas Mayer worked for Jim Cramer for just a slice of that time, a period of 4 years, from, as I understand it, from early 1994 until about September 1998. Amazon.com says Mayer's book came out on March 5th, 2002, and Jim Cramer's book, Confessions of a Street Addict, which tells basically the same story, came out on May 13th, 2002. Now, Cramer's book covers, you know, his entire career before starting the hedge fund, during the hedge fund, and the time even after the hedge fund. And Mayer's book is just for that four-year slice. The books do tell basically the same story during that time slice, at least. And it didn't seem that Cramer was any worse portrayed in Mayer's book than in his own book. Both books seem to portray Jim as a guy who basically won the lottery of luck by getting a guy, Marty Peretz, to invest $1 million with him, and then getting some of his friends to invest also. Both books detail the Jim's smashing of computer keyboards and monitors and jumping up on desks and shouting, etc. Not surprising stuff, really. Mayer's book focuses more on the office setting, I think. In fact, it definitely reminds me of the TV show The Office, by describing the loony characters and their adaptation techniques to living under that environment. Mayer started low on the totem pole, you know, getting coffee, answering phones, but then moved up into actually making trades for Jim. And I don't remember Jim mentioning Mayer in his book. I did an Amazon search inside the book for Mayer from Jim's book, and nothing turned up. Jim does mention some of the people that Mayer mentions, Mark, Sal, and Clark, but only briefly. Mayer does talk about some of the IPO trading shenanigans. In fact, mentioning the IPO trading shenanigans got Mayer in trouble with his book's publication. The publisher had to tear out 3 pages of the book and then republish it. That described a IPO and also described an error that Mayer made in some SEC dealings with Jim. In chapter 8 of Mayer's book, he starts out this way. Trading every minute for quarters and halves to net a few cents per trade might not be how most money managers go about their business. But this was how Jim operated every day. What he loved to do most was trade, trade, and trade. He consistently made money this way. There were times when everything seemed to go wrong, and Jim's abilities and energy on the desk literally saved the firm. Well, that reminds me, you know, in the golf world, that reminds me of the phrase, grinding it out, where you're not hitting fairways and you're not hitting greens, but you're still making long putts to save par and get the occasional birdie to stay in the hunt. Another statement from Mayer's book, Chapter 11, called My Fans Would Be Lost Without Me. Mayer describes the time Jim wrote an article for Smart Money magazine called Pity the Poor Orphans, talking about stocks with little sponsorship, and how the article, after the article was published, all of the thinly traded stocks jumped, one making as much as a 100% move. It's about time the rest of the world woke up to the fact that I'm a genius, Jim crowed, ecstatic that people were listening to him. It was a real ego boost for him. Jim was even more excited because his fund made a fortune as soon as the article hit the stands. The four stocks were some of the firm's largest positions. Buy me 50,000 shares of IBM, cause an imbalance, Jim would scream at the opening. Jim pictured himself as such an influence that his trades pushed stocks around. An imbalance resulted if an order was placed so large that the other side couldn't be found, occasionally causing a stock to be halted on the NYSE. Buying 50,000 shares of IBM, a stock that changes hands millions of times a day, will not cause an imbalance. Still, for some reason, Jim constantly did this. Well, how much money did Jim really make at the hedge fund? Mayer says that in 1994, Jim was managing around $150 million. By 1998, it was $400 million. Well, if it takes money to make money, then making other people's money make you money is the way to make crazy money. Mayer says hedge funds usually take about 1% a year for expenses. Now, I've heard hedge funds take 2%. And he says they take 20% of the profits they make for their investors, their partners. So let's calculate all this up. If by 1998, Cramer was managing $400 million, then 1% of that, the fee, is $4 million. All right. Let's say it gained the average of 24% that Jim claims as his compound annual growth rate for the 14 years. A 24% gain on $400 million is $96 million. That's the gain. So 20% of that gain goes to Jim. 20% of the $96 million is $19.2 million. Add that to the $4 million fee, and you come up with about $23.2 million made in 1 year trading stocks. So, Mayer talks about some of the foibles and perhaps character flaws that he found in his boss. Overall, I gotta say, not a whole lot that's too surprising in the book. And if you had to read just one of them, I guess I'd recommend reading Jim Cramer's Confession of a Street Addict. Now, if you're going to pick up a copy of Mayer's book, I checked it out at Amazon. There is no new version of the book available. You can only buy used copies. And there were 13 available at Amazon used. The average asking price, $79. Low is 50, high. Someone wants $202.81 for it. Yeah, good luck. Okay, well, Jim Cramer's book, Jim Cramer's Mad Money, Watch TV, Get Rich, with Cliff Mason. We've already reviewed chapters 1 and 2. Chapter 1 was buying a stock Mad Money style. Step 1, know yourself and your goals. That was like knowing your risk. Chapter 2 was buying a stock Mad Money style. Step 2, do your homework, which was basically looking up all that stuff on the internet. Chapter 3 is use limit orders and buy incrementally. Now, in this chapter, he says, let's say you've got $10,000 of mad money. That's the money you can use to invest in stocks. That's not retirement money, which you probably want in a 401k or an IRA, a savings account, bonds, or only the most conservative of dividend-paying stocks. He says you need to own a minimum of 5 stocks. We've talked about that. And they have to be in different sectors. So that's what, $2,000 per stock? He says it's, let's say you buy $2,000 of that one stock all at once. And then the next day, the stock is down a dollar. You feel like a total moron. He says on Mad Money, we build positions incrementally. You don't have to buy the stock one share at a time. But since commissions are so low, let's say you do it in 4 installments. Well, what about if you buy it, you buy one of those 4 installments and the stock goes up a dollar? You feel like a total moron, right? No, the time to buy stock is when you have the money. The time to sell stocks is when you need the money. He says, once you buy the stock, you've got to do your maintenance homework now. 3 steps. Step 1, make sure the earnings are okay. Step 2, make sure the reason for owning it is still true. Step 3 is a catch-all. Watch for the forces that move the stock. He says, what if there's bad news on your stock? Well, you could lose a lot of money. So let me read an excerpt from this book. It says, the second suggestion is to do your homework. Many people never achieve the level of excellence they desire in their hobbies because they don't seem willing to put the necessary time into it. If gardening is your hobby, you will need to study the different types of plants and what type of care each needs. If your hobby is working on cars, then at some point you will probably need to read up on mechanics. My point is, all hobbies take time, and entering sweepstakes and contests is no exception. By doing your homework, I mean that you should take time to learn the rules of different sweepstakes and contests. Oh, I'm reading an excerpt from the wrong book. This book is called How to Win Lotteries, Sweepstakes, and Contests in the 21st Century, America's Sweepstakes King, by Steve Ledoux. I wonder how that got mixed up with Kramer's book. Well, anyway, do your homework. Now, in my book, Paul Douglas Boyer's Mad Money Machine, Play Video Games, Get Rich, Chapter 2 says, once you're invested, you don't have to do any homework. You develop an asset allocation of index funds, large cap, small cap, international, U.S., value, growth, emerging market. Have a set percentage in each fund. Set it and forget it, and you're done. And you rebalance every year or so. So chapter 3 of Paul Douglas Boyer's Mad Money Machine, Play Video Games, Get Rich, then, is how to buy stocks the right way. Well, it's not about using limit orders and buying incrementally. It is about when you've got the money, invest it, and you're done. So go play video games. Well, if you've made it this far in the show, you are cadre. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time.
I like buying, holding now, boy. Setting up.